Don't move, just leave your darn mouth with ears monitor. Lean back and stay a while now with ears monitor.
Where in just 3 minutes you'll hear singer-actress Barbara McNair tell Monitor her feelings when facing a celebrity audience and a backstage case of butterflies she had the night of the Academy Awards. I'm Ed McMahon. Georgie Girl by the Baja Marimba Band. You know, I meet plenty of singers on The Tonight Show, and I've seen few who can hold an audience with the confidence, skill, electricity generated by Barbara McNair. But surprisingly, there have been moments when beautiful, talented Barbara felt more like facing a firing squad than her audience. Jack Eigen got the story for Monitor in Chicago.
What about Barbara McNair when you are on stage performing, whether it's a nightclub or any place of entertainment, and they tell you that certain personalities are in the room? For example, if they said to you before you went on, Barbara, you know who's sitting out there? Ethel Merman, Rosemary Clooney, Doris Day, and they mentioned a few other big names. Does that throw you like it will many celebrities, or do you feel you do a better show because you know you got some heavyweights out there who know what you're doing and will understand?
Well, it just depends on whether I feel that I am doing a good show. You know, sometimes you put on a show and you feel that, well, there are some numbers in that show that are weak. And you know they're weak every time you start to do them. And when you reach those numbers and you know those people are out in the audience, you kind of wish you could cut those numbers out, you know. But having celebrities in the audience, it's kind of inspiring to me. I work better with them. I get more upset when my family's there, frankly, because you want to please the people that you have to relate to every day.
You know, Jack Jones, who sings very well, the only time he's thrown a little bit when he's working, and he's very relaxed when he works, but the only time he's thrown is when a songwriter is in the audience and he is doing one of his songs.
Oh, yeah.
He says this is what throws him a little bit.
Yeah, that's nerve-wracking because you don't know how the songwriter's going to feel about the way you interpret his song. Although I believe you have the right to, once they throw a song on the market, you have the right to interpret it any way you want to. But when the person is sitting there, you would like to please the person. I know when I did Shadow of Your Smile on the Academy Awards, and the writers were out there. Of course, that was such a nerve-wracking night to begin with, because everybody was out there. Oh, boy, I was really, really... I don't know if I was so frightened as I was just excited. I tell you, I got rather upset when Lana Turner came on. I was sharing a dressing room with Liza Minnelli, and we said, well, we're not going to go out in the audience because we don't want to get upset before we go on. But we watched it on closed circuit TV, which was also a mistake. You might as well have been in the audience. But when Lana Turner went on, and she seemed so nervous, and she was, you know, like blowing her lines, and she couldn't think of anything. And I got so embarrassed for her that I said, now what if I go out there and like trip or go out there and maybe forget the lyrics? Imagine how embarrassing that would be when 90 million people are looking at you on television. That tightens you up a little.
Many singers would like to do a life story of some singer that they probably idolize or admire, and some singer who's had a life that would fit into a motion picture. Is there any particular singer that whose life you would like to do, let us say, like a Billie Holiday or someone like that?
Well, they are thinking of doing a story of Billie's life, you know. I don't know as I would so much like to portray a famous person, because that person is already so instilled in the minds of the people who are coming there to see the show that they're going to judge you if you don't do it the way that they always remembered the person. It's really a difficult task to try and do someone else's life story. I'd rather just do a straight picture that had never had any connotation of someone else in it.
Barbara McNair. And this is Jack Eigen for Monitor.
Here's Jimmy Rogers. The song is titled, I'll Say Goodbye.
Now that the summer's come and gone, I'll say goodbye. Now that the winter's coming on, I'll say goodbye. I'm not the first man or the last who had a thirst to leave the past. So while the autumn rain is falling, I'll say goodbye. For every star that falls to earth, a new one grows. For every dream that fades away, a new one grows. When things are not what they would seem, you must keep following the dream. So while my heart is still believing, I'll say goodbye. Bird, he will not sing. I can't be caged in by a ring. So while the chilly wind is blowing, I'll say goodbye. So as the winter says hello, I'll say goodbye. I never ever did like snow. I'll say goodbye. I'm just a man and nothing more. In the face of love, I close the door. 'Cause another rose calling, I'll say goodbye. Thank you.
hear the story of a modern Robinson Crusoe, who's also a radio announcer? Sound intriguing? Then stay right here on the Monitor Beacon.
What happens when the mother in a family is hospitalized or disabled? The father works, money is tight, and there's nobody to care for the children. Shall they be taken from their home and sent to an institution? New York Catholic Charities solved this problem for over 2,000 children last year by sending a temporary homemaker to care for them until the mother was well again. This is one of many welfare services you can support by contributing to Catholic Charities, 1967 Fund Appeal.
The Brad Crandall Show is a fact. The Brad Crandall Show is, I think, an interesting fact. The Brad Crandall Show some nights is just one interesting fact right after another. And, of course, the best-known interesting fact on the WNBC Brad Crandall Show, they keep telling me, is me. They is my mother, my father, you know, but that's personal opinion. If you're interested in facts, well-known, little-known, obscure, or manifest, and opinions, lots of those, you call me at Plaza 78866 weeknights following the 9 o'clock news, and we'll have a factual discussion.
WNBC New York, the big voice of Big Town USA, is the sound of conversation.
Monitor 67 at 19 minutes after the hour. May is the month for dogwood, flowering crabapple, gorgeous azaleas. You say you know all that. And what am I leading up to? Only that May is also National Radio Month. And we feel Monitor represents one of the solid reasons why radio has come to be known as the people's choice. Our Monday mail following every weekend bears that out. Thanks for your kind comments, your loyalty to radio and Monitor. We like that. And don't forget that you're invited to a party. What party? Why, Monitor's mammoth 12th birthday party, the weekend of June 10th and 11th. Surprises, nostalgia, glimpses of the future, celebrities, special events. Don't miss any of it. So mark that calendar right now. Monitor's birthday party. We're 12 years old, the weekend of June 10th and 11th. No printed invitations necessary. Just tune in your favorite NBC station. Former radio announcer who lives in Lodi, Ohio, is about to embark on the biggest adventure of his young life. And he's taking his wife and 3-year-old daughter. Richard Ault will spend a year on an uninhabited South Pacific island. He's been planning the trip for 5 years. Now, why is he doing this? Let's find out as Dick Oliver, NBC News Cleveland, gets the story.
Dick, where did you ever get an idea like this to go to a South Sea island and live for a year?
I'm not sure I really know where the original idea started, but I think it was when I was in the Navy. We made many trips down to the Caribbean, and we used to roam the waters, and I would sit on the flight deck looking out over the ocean and see very small atolls or islands off in the distance, and I began getting intrigued with them, and I began getting intrigued with the sea and islands in general, and started reading Robinson Crusoe, Swiss Family Robinson, Missioner's books, and just anything I could get my hands on about the South Seas or the South Pacific.
What preparations have you made for the trip?
Reading every possible thing that we can, learning basic survival techniques, learning how to prepare food, learning of the difference between the poisonous fish in the South Pacific and the ones that are non-poisonous, studying the many different things that you can do with coconuts to make them taste different, grind coconut meat up into flour itself, and just basically survival techniques in order to survive.
Is there any particular reason why you chose this area?
Yes, there is. Two very basic reasons. One, the area that we're going to is completely free of hurricanes. They do have some good storms at times. And also, it's completely free of malaria.
What do you expect to be doing while you're on the island? A year is a long time to be without any other people around.
Yes, it is. In fact, we've been told by a number of people that boredom will be our greatest problem. However, we think we can overcome this. We're a family that has enjoyed doing things together all of our lives, and the more we can be together and work together and have fun together, the happier we are. We naturally plan on writing a novel about our experiences, and with the photography work that we plan on doing, nature studying, bird studying, writing our diaries from day to day, I think we're going to have plenty to keep us busy, along with just basically surviving on the island, preparing our food and things of this nature.
What do you expect to find on the island?
Peace and contentment.
What if you tire of being on the island or get sick or injured? How are you going to get off?
We are taking a shortwave radio down with us, also a number of flare guns. We will be close enough to a main island that has air facilities, and we have been assured by a number of people in Washington and also with the Navy Department that we will be able to be picked up within an hour or 2 hours by a rescue squad if the emergency does exist. Naturally, we hope this will not come about. Being that my wife and daughter are going along, I plan to take every precaution in the world because I don't want to injure them or impair their health in any way.
What are you going to be taking with you?
Basically, a week's supply of food, medical provisions that we will be getting either in Hawaii or Fiji. A few knives, an axe. I am taking a rifle that I doubt if we'll use at all, but it'll be packed away just in case. I haven't the vaguest idea what I possibly might use the rifle for, but we are going to be completely away from civilization, and I feel it important that we have that if the need ever arises. Other than that, that's all. No tents, no modern conveniences of any kind. We're taking camera equipment, writing paper, and a typewriter.
Richard Ault, good luck to you, your wife, and your 3-year-old daughter. As you spend a year on an island in the South Pacific, I hope you make it. This is Don Oliver reporting from Lodi, Ohio, back now to monitor at Radio Central.
Speaks like a courageous, intelligent, well-prepared young man, doesn't he? The Ault family leaves on Tuesday. We wish them Godspeed and good luck on an adventure trip many of us would like to share. Don, wife, and child are sure to spend many hours doing what Patti Page sings about right now. Walking. Just walking.
Walking. Just walking. Thinking of how I let you slip away. Crying. Slowly dying. Tears and heartache, that's the price I have to pay. Talking, talking, always talking, talking, telling, telling our friends I know that I was wrong. Pray. Forgive me and come back where you belong. What can I say? What can I do? How can I prove I still love you? Just walking, walking, wishing, wishing that I'm not hoping hopelessly. Till we'll be walking, walking back in step together like we used to be. together like we used to be. Walking.
For the most important health insurance message since Medicare, look for Continental Casualty's ad in today's paper. Whether you're traveling with a professional softball team, weekending with friends in the country, or just taking a family trip to Aunt Clarissa's, Monitor is pleased to accompany you at home or on the go across the nation. In Phoenix, Arizona, we're heard on KTAR. Hello, Phoenix, and all points of the compass as our stations sign in. Ed McMahon here, back shortly.
Monitor, your information center for the weekend on the NBC Radio Network.
Monitor 67 and your host, Ed McMahon. Author and columnist Dick Schaap says our turned-on youngsters are courting disaster. He'll be along later this half hour. About 3 minutes from now, Joe Garagiola and Baltimore Oriole pitcher Jim Palmer discuss ball players' superstitions. First, the Johnny Mann Singers.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride?
Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola.
Over the years, I've always gotten a kick out of watching certain ball players who have particular patterns that they always follow. Some guys will never step on a foul line. Other guys always touch a base on their way in from the outfield. The little things they do are all different, but most of them have one thing in common. If you ask them if they're superstitious, they'll look at you and say, "Who, me? Nah, I'm not superstitious." Well, the other day, I talked about that with Baltimore Orioles pitcher Jim Palmer. And I got a different kind of answer. Jim, a very basic question. As a pitcher, are you superstitious?
Yes. In the recent years, I've been eating pancakes every time I pitch, and I also take 3 pieces of bubble gum and put them in my back pocket. The pancakes started. I won 4 games in a row while just eating them accidentally. I really didn't even notice it, and then one morning I didn't eat them, and I lost, and then I kept eating them again, and I won 4 more games, and more or less I eat them every time I pitch from now on.
Well, let me backtrack now. Are these special kind of pancakes, like coconut pancakes or
watermelon?
No, they're
just, really doesn't matter. If we're on the road, I eat them in restaurants. I do know last year in Boston, I ate blueberry pancakes for breakfast, and we got 16 runs, but I haven't tried them since.
Does it change for a night game?
I just eat it, you know, whenever I get up, I usually eat pancakes, so I try to get up early.
Any special number?
No, it varies. I think I had 2 orders one time last year and didn't do so well, so I kind of keep them down to 4 or 6.
Now, this bubble gum, is this unused or is it used?
It's unused. It's, I don't know. I just had it every time in Baltimore. They have a basket with some bubble gum in before you go out the field, and I just, you know, take 3 pieces and put it in my pocket and walk out there and pray.
When did you find out that you had this little thing going? Did you win a game and there were the 3 pieces of bubble gum?
Yeah, I just kind of did that, and doesn't matter what kind it is. Just keep on doing it, you know, and even if I lose, I keep doing it. So, because I've, so far in the big leagues, won more than I've lost.
Jim, do you find that when this kind of news gets out, you get all kinds of suggestions from fans?
Yes. I don't know. People send me maple syrup and stuff like that, and pancake mix and hams and stuff like that to go with my pancakes. And during the series, I got a lot of publicity last year, and, you know, people send you little letters suggesting what to do.
Have you ever tried to switch a superstition? Like maybe you'd like to collect cars or something like that?
No, I'd like that. That's a good idea. Somebody suggested steaks or something like that. But I really haven't switched anything this year so far.
How about these things with crossing the foul lines or stepping on a bag or going to the rosin bag? None of those?
No, none of that. I know one of our pitchers, Eddie Watt, has to walk to home plate and then walk out to the mound every time. But I've never had any of those type of superstitions at all.
And do you feel badly when you do miss those pancakes by some quirk?
Well, I've tried to, you know, to eat them each time. But, you know, if I don't, I really, like I said, spring training, I'm going to try to rely on my ability this year instead of pancakes.
Get rid of that pancake on your back, huh?
Yeah, that's true.
Jim, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Joe.
And that was Jim Palmer, the talented and superstitious pitcher of the Baltimore Orioles. And this is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
Sports coverage is only a former major league ballplayer can deliver it. That's Joe Garagiola, weekends on Monitor, weekdays on NBC Radio. Here's another big leaguer in anybody's book.
Why don't you stop and think it over before you say it's over, because it'll never be over for me. Why don't you stop and think it over before you say it's over, because it'll never be over for me. Think of all the happy times we knew, all the memories I shared with you. Why don't you stop and think it over before you say it's over, because it'll never be over for me. Don't walk out the door and say goodbye. What we had worth one more try. Why don't you stop and think it over before you say it's over, because it'll never be over for me. I just don't know what I would do, darling, without you. What a cold and lonely place this world. Over for me.
Thank you, Mr. Como. Narcotics and the teenager in 4 minutes here on the Monitor Beacon.
USA, focal point of the world, place of people, place of greatness, whose environs encompass the totality of today, headquarters of the United Nations, of the world of communications, center of the arts, Big Town, USA, place of action, holding forth its promise of now, making each moment alive. And WNBC, the big voice of Big Town, communicates these living moments to you.
WNBC, New York, the big voice of Big Town, USA, is the sound of people.
Ed McMahon, the old Radio Central clock watcher here at 15 minutes before the hour. And we can easily deliver the 50 guitars of Tommy Garrett. Or Garrett, rather. We just have to pull a few strings. Sorry about that. The song is Cordon. Over 65, Continental Casualty's Medicare's great in today's paper is important to you. Look for it. Dick Schaff, syndicated columnist and author, has just completed a new book which takes an in-depth look at a huge segment of our rebellious younger generation and their use of narcotics. The title, appropriately enough, is simply Turned On. Why are the kids turned on? How can parents, friends, adult advisors reach them to guide them against the serious problems and troubles of which many of them are headed? Schaff has some sensible, no-nonsense suggestions as he chats with Monitor reporter Betty Grobling in Washington.
Dick, do you have any suggestions as to why this is happening?
Well, there is no one explanation as to why it's happening. It's a combination of many factors, of the urge to rebel, of the urge to find new thrills, an element of self-destructiveness. All of these factors, a general dissatisfaction with society. The terrible thing to me is where people are giving up on protesting against what they consider wrong in society, and instead of fighting society on its own terms, withdrawing into an LSD world or an acid world where they are completely apart from society.
Isn't this an enormously expensive situation? I don't see how these kids can support it.
Well, it is expensive with some of the drugs. Certainly a heroin habit is about the most expensive habit anyone can have. It's worse than golf or anything. But on something like pills are relatively cheap, relatively easy to get. Even LSD, most places they can get a dose of LSD for $2, say. And all you need is one dose a week is a heavy user. Two doses a week is really what is called an acid head. And marijuana is relatively inexpensive. a few hundred dollars will support a good habit for a year.
But it seems to me that if these youngsters were aware of the physical damage, that this would be a deterrent. Is it not? What happens to them physically, Dick?
Well, there are many things that can happen, starting with the very bottom use of drugs or sort of drugs. Sniffing glue or sniffing cleaning fluid can be destructive of various membranes. It can affect vital organs of the body. The use of amphetamines, the PEP pills, in huge enough quantities can affect the brain and other vital organs.
In a permanent fashion?
Yes, even to the point of causing premature senility. I know of a man who, in his early 40s, is on the brink of senility after 15 years of heavy use of amphetamines. Barbiturates are physically addictive, and the withdrawal from barbiturates, once you're addicted, is even worse than the withdrawal from heroin. It's a very terrible and painful withdrawal. Heroin itself, as the ultimate narcotic, causes all kinds of side effects. Hepatitis from unclean needles, malnutrition from not eating right, all the diseases from unsanitary
living. What about
conditions.
The rash?
Amphetamines in some people can cause a skin reaction, a rash. Eventually, all of these various drugs, you know, reach the vital organs. Traces of it get into the brain and the liver. And
Dick Shapp, since you've been involved with this problem for quite a long time now and been writing about it, and have done so in the book that we're talking about called Turned On, what do you suggest?
Well, I think, you know, the ultimate suggestion is to cure the ills of society, which we're not going to do overnight. I think in the specific drug area, we need more education, straightforward education to show exactly what the hazards are of the various drugs, so that the young people, who are the ones we're most worried about, can intelligently make the choice not to use drugs. They can find other ways to turn on, because there's nothing wrong with turning on as such. I think every time I sit down to a typewriter or you sit down to a microphone, we're turned on to an extent. We're involved and interested, and that's what these young people need, is something that will get them excited without using drugs.
Well, you say education. Is there not education now in the schools, or is there something wrong with it, or what?
There is education now, and some of it, I'm sure, is very good. Some schools have good programs. But too much of the literature in the area is overstated literature written by...
Overstated,
people,
you say?
Overstated by people who are committed to one side or the other. They're either totally anti-drugs or totally pro-drugs. They ignore the arguments of the other side, and they overstate their own arguments. The kids know enough to see when an argument is overstated, and it loses all its impact when it is overstated.
How would you state it, then?
I would tell them that each of these drugs does have certain rewards, but then I would point out the hazards of the drugs. I feel that the hazards outweigh the rewards. I would not overstate the dangers. No one is going to become mortally ill from smoking one stick of marijuana or even from one shot of heroin, but it's the ultimate dangers are very frightening. And if the kids realize this, and they realize that once they get into it, it becomes harder and harder to escape, I think then they can find other avenues. Because they really, if they stop to think about it, they don't want the troubles that these drugs cause. And they cause all kinds of trouble.
You can read about it in Turned On, the title of the book by my guest, Dick Shapp. This is Betty Grobley in Washington for Monitor.
Monitor, entertaining but also informative proof. I direct your complete attention to NBC Monitor News on the Hour, coming up. This is Ed McMahon.
This is NBC.